Crowds packed the arterial streets leading to the bottom of the Acropolis. Local troops forced them back. Between them was a narrow access corridor that seethed like a snake as the crowd bulged on either side. From side streets, it seemed that the Ever-City was emptying. Men, women, children, all dressed in their holiday best, pushing forward in family groups, street parties, parish congregations. They brought with them their family icons and shrines, the likenesses of imperial saints, the ancient images of the golden throne that hung all year in the local chapels. Women pinned money to the carved images as they were carried by on ornate silken palanquins. Some sang psalms. The note of their music was joyous, fearful, devout. One of the Calabania waved their vehicles to a halt. Dido went forward. The man had to raise his voice above the din.
"We can't keep the way open for the tanks. You'll have to go forward on foot."
Dido summoned her squad. Corporal Welt was a big man.
"Are you sure it's safe?" he asked.
"No," she told him.
"But that's why we're here."
General Benedict was moved by the fervour of the crowd.
"This is 11 years' worth of faith."
He stopped and looked about.
"The last time this festival took place, Cadia still stood."
That fact made them all take note. Each of them looked back to where they were 11 years before. So much had changed for the worse, and each Cadian felt personally responsible. Dido's squad surrounded Benedict and Mir as they stepped down onto the cobblestones. The crowd barely noticed the Cadians as they advanced the last few 100 yards towards the back of the chapel, where it abutted the Acropolis. They pushed through the crush and mounted the rear steps of the grotto chapel. Ecclesiarchy attendants in long black gowns and hoods stood guard, shock pikes ready.
"General Benedict," Dido announced. "He is expected."
"Pass."
Dido handed over the data slate. The protocols lit up as the acolyte ran a hand over the screen.
"Bless you,"
the man said as he handed the slate back. The acolyte stood back to let the Cadians through. Dido went last. She paused at the top of the stairs and looked back. The corridor that they had passed through had been sealed up by the compression of the crowds. Far off, she could see their tanks pushing slowly forward. Their turret weapons stood out among the sea of heads, the statues bobbing above them like flotsam carried on a flood. She turned and found the shock pikes closed before her face. One of the men stated, "Women are not allowed." Dido's temper was up in a moment.
"I am bodyguard to the general."
She pushed at the pikes, but the acolytes would not let her pass. Dido shoved forward, and there was a brief scuffle before General Benedict intervened. He put his hand on the shoulder of the attendants.
"Let her through. She is part of my bodyguard."
The acolytes looked to their leader.
"I am sorry, my lord," he said. "It is the custom. Common women are not allowed within the precincts."
Benedict leant in close.
"I am the representative of the Imperium of Man upon this planet. She is the commander of my bodyguard. You will allow my sergeant inside."
Dido took advantage of the moment of indecision and thrust the pikes apart.
"Don't worry," she said. "I'm not a common woman. I'm Cadian."
Battle sisters Ray and Yoss were on duty at the cathedral gates. They could hear the faint echo of music and drums drifting up with the breeze. And then, over the sound of the wind, came engines straining against the gradient. The sound grew in volume.
"I thought the pilgrims come after the mass," novice Yoss said. She was a thin, red-headed sister with a solid, square jaw.
Ray's face was stern.
"They do," she stated, "but there are always some who are keener than others."
The sisters watched as a file of pilgrim half-tracks approached. Their faces were hard and expressionless as the trucks, full of young men visible behind heavy tarpaulins, drew up the last switchbacks to the cathedral gatehouse. The men inside were chanting the Emperor's name. The volume of their shouts grew louder. It sounded almost defiant, angry. Sister Ray stepped forward and put her power-armoured glove up to signal a halt. The lead truck slewed to a stop 20 yards off.
"The cathedral is closed until after the saint has spoken," she declared.
The driver waved at her to get out of the way.
"The cathedral is," she repeated, as the back hatches slammed down and the tarpaulin covers were dragged away and heavy stubbers were revealed, gleaming, freshly oiled, weapons of war. Then they fired. The battle sisters reacted instantly.
Yoss started to shout an alarm. Ray reached for her bolter as the pilgrims pulled las pistols from under their robes and began firing.
Las bolts stabbed out. They were a thicket of searing light.
Ray was fearless. She ducked forward, engaging her voxlink.
"The cathedral is under attack," she reported calmly as she aimed and fired, her bolt gun bucking with each shot.
Yoss was beside her, the two black-clad sisters standing shoulder to shoulder. The attackers were thrown back for a moment, but as each half-track swung up, the odds began to lengthen sharply as more men joined the attack and their vehicle-mounted weapons sprayed the sisters with hard rounds.
"I will cover you. Fall back," Ray ordered.
But as she turned, she saw that there were warriors inside the cathedral gardens running towards them from the direction of the basilica.
"Throne," she hissed. "We're trapped."
Benedict and Mia were led through antechambers, robing rooms and sacristy, all bustling with nervous servers and chalice and incense bearers, their heavy ball thurible waiting to be lit. At the doors to the chapel, General Dominka's mountain infantry stood guard. They stiffened when they saw Benedict and saluted smartly. Dido stepped back to let Benedict enter first. He bent a little to pass under the low stone arch, removed his peaked cap and tucked it under his arm. Dido entered the hallowed space last. To the right was the carved archway of the rock grotto. To the left was the portico, a temple of marble and gold and precious stonework. After the narrow corridors, the sudden extravagance and the sense of light and air was staggering. The wide chapel nave was already filling. Although no one spoke in more than a whisper, the resounding hubbub echoed back, and through that noise came the sound of the servitor choirs as they hung above the congregation in cages of ornate filigree and sang psalms. The Cadians moved forward to the carved wooden seats of the choir. Another detail of Calibania were checking everyone who went in. Their officer spoke in a low voice.
"Sorry, sir, only invited guests allowed."
Benedict started to argue, but the officer gestured forward.
"I understand, sir, but every seat is already taken, look."
He gestured to the seats of the choir.
"Your bodyguard will have to stay here. I'm sorry, but everyone wants to bring a few extra. Each rich star has their own life wards, and this is a holy place. It was not built for soldiers."
"But we are protecting the general," Dido put in quickly.
"I suggest you stand here with me. You will be just yards away from the general. Should anything happen, you can be there in an instant."
Dido started to argue, but Benedict put his hand on her arm.
"It's all right, Sergeant. Adjutant Mia has kept me safe for a long time now, on and off the battlefield. And even one-handed, I'm not entirely useless. I'm sure we'll be safe in there."
Dido didn't like it at all, but she reluctantly consented.
"All right, sir, but just signal and I'll be with you in a moment."
"Thank you," Benedict said. "I will."
Battle Sister Ray threw herself at her attackers. She slammed fresh ammunition into her gun, wielding it one-handed. As she fought, a hard round hit Yoss in the back of her head. She barely remained standing. Her training and discipline kicked in as she fired a furious salvo into the enemy streaming towards them.
"Fall back," Ray ordered Yoss, slamming her gun into the face of a young man.
Blood was pouring from the wound in her scalp.
"No, sister, I will fight and die with you."
Yoss fired furiously into her attackers. Another round struck her in the neck. She struggled to retain her feet, but someone slammed into her. Her boot slipped and she tumbled sideways.
Yoss fought for a moment as knives and boots rained down on her. There was a flurry of stabbing blades. The assailants were so numerous that they were already pushing towards the open gateway. A confessor led Benedict and Mia to their seats, right behind the altar. Each one was set into an arched niche with a pattern of aquilas carved into the stonework. At the back of the niches were carved the titles of Richstar family members. Benedict was in the niche labelled Marquis. Mia was in the alcove reserved for the Emir of Kins. On the other side of the choir sat two members of the Adepta Sororitas. One wore a suit of power armour, chased with gold filigree. The other had a severe monobrow and a spiked leather gag wrapped about her mouth. The two sisters nodded towards the Cadians.
"So it's not just Dido who forced her way in," Benedict noted.
Mia nodded. "They're the Order of the Ebon Chalice. Fighting strength is 30 sisters militant, 20 other sisters."
"I should go and pay my respects."
Benedict walked across the choir.
"Greetings, lady. I am General Benedict of the Cadian 101st.
The sister in the ornate power armour regarded him with a look of cold disdain.
"Greetings in the name of the God Emperor, General Benedict. My name is Canoness Madalena. This is Sister Menel."
The gagged sister militant tilted her head forward. The canoness went on. "I hear you have come to bolster the physical defence of our system. We wish you the best, but you know the true defence is spiritual. No number of guns or tanks can make up for those with pure hearts."
"I agree," Benedict said.
The canoness lifted an eyebrow.
"If the Cadians had paid more attention to their prayers, then perhaps Cadia would not have fallen."
Benedict's face flushed at the insult.
"We are soldiers. If anyone's prayers let us down, it was not ours."
Canoness Madalena's eyebrow lifted even higher. "We have a saying that the bad shooter blames the gun."
"I do not trade in blame. It is wasted breath, Canoness. I deal with what lies before me and the strength I have to throw the enemy back."
"Well, the failure of the Cadians has meant our system is also in danger."
"Thank the throne, that is something I can rectify then," Benedict said.
His cheeks were still flushed as he returned to his seat.
"What is she like?" Mia asked.
Benedict spoke through the side of his mouth.
"A right bastard."
Celestian Simona turned her Voxbeed off for the duration of the morning's confessions. When she had heard the last proclamation of wrongdoing, she made the sign of the Aquila and pushed herself to stand. She had an old wound in her back that ached after so long kneeling. She relished the pain. Suffering was a gift from the Emperor, and it left the patient wiser and purer. Celestian Simona was admired for her purity. The Sisters of the Ebon Chalice held the cathedral gatehouse as their nunnery. It had all they needed: barrack halls, chapels, places for religious observance. Through the heavy stonework and rockcrete, she could hear the sounds of the sisters going about their daily rituals: prayer, absolution, purification, target practice, swordplay, exercise. She closed the confessionary door behind her. Through the loophole, she felt the chill of the morning air and the sound of shouting. The people's faith was weak, she thought. Celestian Simona had found the people of this planet churlish and subject to wild superstitions and passions. As she passed another loophole, she could hear sounds of gunfire. She paused for a moment and looked through. She saw the flash of steel. She engaged her Voxbeed, and immediately a wash of voices flowed in, urgent, calm, focused. "Who is attacking?" she demanded. But Sisters Ray and Yoss were beyond the ability to talk, and as Simona leapt down the stairs, she drew her bolt pistol. The sound of fighting below her struck her with alarm. The enemy were within the gates. In the chapel of St. Ignazio, the two Cadians watched as the nave filled,
Then the great bronze gates were thrown open, and beyond, in the bright square of daylight, they could see the massed crowd of heads and bobbing statues. At last there was a roll of drums, and Benedict saw one palanquin that was moving forward over the heads of the crowd, then another and another. It took a moment before he realised that it was the procession of rich stars on their ornate, gilt-worked grav barges. There were seven in total. About them swooped a flock of blue enamel praisebirds. All the prominent members of the rich star clan processed over the crowds into the chapel and up the nave. Beneath them the people seethed like the legs of an upturned caterpillar. Each man reached out in wonder as the barges passed overhead, trailing long silk pennants, before, one by one, the rich stars dismounted and took up their appointed positions in the choirs, their life wards standing with Dido and the Cadians in the chapels behind. Last of all came the Pedrizzo in a golden barge. There were 10 praisebirds swooping round his carriage, their songs reverberating from the vast ceilings, the round arches, the distant gleam of the painted vaulting. When he too had taken his seat, all was ready for the cardinal. He came last, at the end of a long procession of priests and confessors, acolytes and deacons, wearing the death mask of Saint Ignazio and a golden robe. The pace of proceedings was starting to concern Benedict. His mind kept rolling through all the work that needed to be done to defend this planet and the larger system as well.
"Remind me, what's supposed to happen?" Benedict hissed to Mia.
"The saint appears."
"Literally?"
Mia had done the research.
"It varies each time, apparently. From what I gather, the cardinal might speak in voices. The sick might be healed. Sometimes a holy fire hangs in the air."
Benedict paused. He was holy enough in his own way, but he was busy and was eager to get to his work, planning the war.
"How soon can we go?"
Mia checked his chronograph.
"Let's wait until the appearance happens." "Right, come on, Ignazio," Benedict urged. "Time to rattle your bones."
Celestian Simona reached the entranceway. One of the bastion's doors was open, and a sister lay in the doorway, a man bent over her, a hostile.
"This is holy land," she shouted, "sacred to the god emperor."
The warrior looked up. Any words he might have spoken were cut short, as the mass reactive shell hit him square in the forehead and threw him backwards. The effect was a balletic backflip. Then he crashed dead against the blood-splattered wall and slid to a crumpled heap. Celestian Simona leapt down the remaining stairs in three great strides. Two more men appeared. She strode down to meet them.
"This is territory sacred to the Sisters of the Ebon Chalice. Unbelievers are not allowed upon these stones."
She slammed the first man back against the wall. The second doubled over as the bolt round tore through the soft flesh of his belly. There were screams outside. She stood in the doorway and swung her torso around to fire on more intruders, each shot knocking one back. She punched the polished iron alarm stud with her left hand as she heel-kicked an attacker back down the steps. Klaxons began to ring above her. Hundreds of furious men were rushing through the open cathedral gateway. A band turned towards her, mounting the steps up to her position. She held her ground, firing constantly, and ducked back as cannon shells shredded the doorway about her. At last, she could hold no more. She kicked the dead out of the way and dragged the doorway closed, slamming the lock stud with the heel of her palm. Steel wall latches engaged, locking the portals closed, and an instant later there was a sound like the thunder of hail on a flakboard roof. The solid metal door shivered as it took a full round of cannon shells and las bolts. It began to glow white hot. Major Castellec was sitting in his office in intake barracks, dealing with the neglected day-to-day priorities of a regiment when the klaxon sounded. He leapt up and threw open his office door and demanded to know what was happening. "False alarm?" a young aide suggested, but the alarm kept ringing,
and Castalek had a sixth sense that told him this was trouble. He ran down the marble-tiled entrance hall in search of answers. No one seemed to know what was going on. In the drill yard, everyone was running about, and confusion reigned. A Vox officer appeared at the doorway on the adjacent wing. He hurried out into the yard, and suddenly the ground about him exploded with autocannon shells. Castalek threw himself back. Years of experience told him in an instant that the shots had come from above, which could only mean the top of the Acropolis. And there was nothing there but the cathedral and the basilica.
"General alarm!" the Vox officer shouted across the yard. "The Sisters of the Ebon Chalice have come under attack!"
Castalek looked around, but everyone was looking to him. In a moment, he realised he was now in charge. Benedict and the whole military leadership of the system was at that damned festival. He slammed his open palm onto the alarm bell. Somehow, he had to get down there and save them. Chapter 5. The crowd inside the chapel of St. Ignazio had been waiting for nearly an hour before a figure wearing Ignazio Richstar's death mask appeared. A reverent silence fell. The people strained to see as the robed figure strode forward and took his place behind the altar. They were full of eager anticipation and expectation, but none more so than the masked figure himself. Of course, it should have been Cardinal Zerium, but he lay beaten to death at the summit of the Acropolis. In his place stood Charlia Starborn. Charlia had waited all his life for this moment, when he would channel the spirit of Saint Ignazio. For this day, he was the manifestation of the saint within the materium. He could barely believe he was standing here. His body was light, despite the weight of the robes upon his shoulders. He went through the many small rituals, as he had in private, for the rich stars themselves. The crowd was breathless as he performed them all, faultlessly, and they answered his prayers with formulaic words and eager voices. With each minute, the sense of expectation rose. It would not be long now before the saint would speak, and the link with their ancient forebear would be cemented once more. At last, there was nothing left but the moment of revelation. Charlia bowed to the altar, then turned and moved back towards the golden shrine. In their cages, the servitors lifted their voices in sublime worship. A pair of attendants stepped forward, a cushion held between them, and on it the key to the shrine. Charlia felt his hands shaking as he took the heavy golden key. He set it into the hall and pressed forward. The lock opened with a dull click. He returned the key and opened the door. Within, the air was cool and musty. It smelt of past ages. There was nothing inside except a faceted glass phial. He held it in his hand, lifted it out, and knelt. A hush spread from the nave and seemingly out across the entire city. Charlia could hear a distant dog bark, a door slamming shut, a woman's voice raised briefly. He breathed deep and settled his nerves, then lifted the phial of the saint's blood from its sacred shrine. Above him, the chapel ceiling was lit with glorious murals that depicted the might of the golden throne. The words of the servitor choir washed over Charlia like a wave of hope and expectation. The phial held the blood of Saint Ignazio. At the bottom, the liquid had thickened to a dark sludge. Charlia lifted it in both hands and turned the glass one full circle, then another, and again, the facets throwing the light up onto his face. People started to shout, single voices at first, then masses.
"Ignazio, show yourself! Heal the sick! Bring us your blessing!"
Charlia's hands were clammy as he rotated the phial. The blood of the saint remained dry and solid in the corner. His shoulders began to ache. Shouts from the crowd coalesced into chanting voices, calling the saint's name over and over. Charlia had seen many festivals in his time. He had seen the blind healed, green fire play over the heads of the most worthy, and grown men weep. How would the saint reveal himself? His hands tingled for a moment, as if a warm shower ran over him. Then he felt his feet lifting from the ground. Charlia started to rise from the floor. He did not resist. He came to a halt 10 feet above the altar, hanging in the air, the phial of Saint Ignazio held in his outstretched hands. The speed of the manifestation startled Charlia. Stillness spread through the chapel. A hush fell over the chanting people. Charlia Starborn laughed for joy. Relief spread through him. Next to him, an acolyte rose into the air, and another. The young men started to weep for joy. Ignazio! The crowd chanted, the sound growing in strength and passion as all the assembled people began to call out as one. The blessed are being raised! Someone shouted. Charlia started to cry with joy. The phial went cold. Frost crazed the glass. It was so cold it burned his hands. Stabbing agony lanced up his arms. He called on the saint for his aid. He tried to pull his hands away, but they had frozen to the glass. And then the frost began to move up his arms. The figure of the cardinal hung, hands upraised, the phial starting to pulse with light. Then he started to scream. The masked face was thrown back as his feet kicked out against the air. What the hell is happening? Benedict cursed as the temperature dropped. His hackles rose. The air smelt of witchcraft. He looked about. The faces of the attendants and acolytes were turning from wonder to horror. Get him down! Benedict shouted. Frost began to rime the alcoves where statues looked on with impassive faces. He barged forward. As the priests panicked, he had to shove them aside. He could feel the frost in his lungs, his breath steamed before his face. Get him down! Benedict shouted. Someone jumped on his back. Stop! It is the will of the saint, a voice hissed. Benedict threw the man off. He knew warp taint. He'd felt it on Cadia when the boundaries of the immaterium had begun to fray and tear. Get him down, he said again, as more priests threw themselves at him. He heard Mia behind him and punched and kicked. There was still someone on his back. He twisted and punched them with his stump. He followed up with his left hand. Then someone screamed. The cardinal hung, a living torch, kicking and writhing in agony. The screams spread as one by one each of the hanging figures erupted in flames. Get him down! Benedict roared as drops of burning fat rained down on them all. The Pedrizzo ran towards the back of the grotto, his life wards ploughing a swathe through the crowd, cutting down any who might get in their way. Dido's squad passed them going in the other direction. A life ward swung at her. She ducked the power blade and shoved forward her squad with her. They shoved the priests and panicking dignitaries aside and leapt over the ornate wooden altar rail. The place was turning to panic. Carabinier officers lining the front of the nave shouted conflicting orders, but they were few against the crowd. The thousands of terrified penitents in the chapel were like a muscle that twitches and thrashes under the touch of the electroprod. Statues and icons were dropped. Some went mad, tearing the servitor choristers out of their cages and smashing their skulls. They ripped tapestries from the wall, tore down statues, burned icons, and murdered any ecclesiarchs that they could get their hands on. And over them, suspended figures kicked and writhed as they lifted into the air and then, with a whoosh of sudden flames, started to burn. The screams were terrible. One Calabania officer shouted at his men, "Shoot them!" The Calabania fired over the heads of the crowd. Each human beacon they killed stilled its screaming. Canoness Maddalena was a powerful figure as she pushed bodies aside, bellowing prayers in a strident voice. Hand raised, she directed her faith at the body of Charlia. Nunc lodare debemus octerum regni Callistus, she shouted. Her faith was like a balm to stormy waters. She stepped closer, and the cardinal's corpse quivered in the air and then crashed onto the altar, the blackened cadaver scattering candelabras and chalices. One by one, the human torches fell. At that moment, the crowd's hysteria might have been calmed, but as the canoness strode forward, a man hosed her with a las pistol at point-blank range. Her power armour took most of the damage, but as the bolt scored a hole, the sting made her grunt in pain. She spun and fired. The bolt hit the man in the middle of the forehead. It slammed him back with a brief spatter of gore. Another appeared, and another, and a fourth. She erased each of them with a single shot and kept moving forward. For an instant, the Calabania stood transfixed. Then their officers directed them to fire at the plain-clothed attackers, and there was a stampede as they shot wildly back into the crowd, hitting pilgrims at random. The festival of Saint Ignazio had descended into bloody mayhem. Chapter 6. The chief enforcer was exhausted. He'd barely slept that night. Throughout the morning, demands had kept coming in from the rich star dignitaries about what each of them wanted in terms of escorts and entourages, until Rudgard had turned the voxlinks off. "Frick them," he'd said, and left the management of the ceremony to his second in command, Rastan. He'd spent the morning organising roadblocks and settling petty territorial disputes and the usual rounds of gangster activity, both within and without the Evercity. And as he mounted his bike and started back to the Enforcer Command Centre, Officer Palek called him in.
"Got a pair of gangers," Palek voxed. "Trading stims. Got a sack of the stuff. Want to come down and take a look?"
"No," Rudgard told him. "I'm done. Revoke them and bring the stims to the mouse hole."
Palek left his voxbeat open by accident. A moment later, there was the sound of muffled shots.
"Help, turn it off, Palek," Rudgard shouted into his helmet vox.
But Palek couldn't hear him. There was a swishing sound, another shout, and the roar of a bolter shot. Rudgard cursed and flicked his own vox off. He accelerated along the roads that wound down to the lower reaches. He didn't need to listen to that. Chief Enforcer Rudgard Howe's vox was still off by the time he got to the long, straight road that led to the mouse hole. The vox silence was like cool water on a hot head, with the roar of his engines the only noise as he powered along the road. The armoured gates rose to let him inside, and he swung his bike round the rock-crete perimeter and down the ramp that led to the underground depot. He screeched to a halt and tore off his helmet, striding towards the conveyor, slamming the door closed behind him and punching the top floor with a stab of his gloved finger. The conveyor rose steadily through the garrison levels, armoury, parking lots, training zones and the intelligence bureaus to the command bunker at the top. He was expecting to find all the work done, the ceremony ended, and the people moving up to the cathedral for their pilgrimage. Tired and irritable, he walked into a shambles of shouting and fear and dismay. In a dozen vigilance-picked screens, he saw scenes of war. Armed men, burning buildings, las battles raging. Stunned, he looked from one rolling screen to another. In half an hour, the city that he had spent a lifetime taming and controlling had ignited into a conflagration.
"Tell me this is a joke," he hissed.
No one laughed. Howe moved with purpose. He put out a general alarm.
"All units, report to the Grotto Chapel immediately. Fire at will. Hear me? Fire at will."
Within minutes, he had all available guns assembled in the Enforcer precinct. He had 157 hands. Each man carried an assault shotgun loaded with man-stopping rounds. They wore standard-issue riot armour, flak jackets and thigh and elbow pads, their heads enclosed in dark-visored carapace helmets.
"You've all heard by now," he said. "I fear that Potence is facing an insurrection. I expect you to put it down."
The enforcers piled into their repressor pattern tanks, each one painted in matte black with a four-pointed star emblazoned on the sides. Chief Enforcer Howe took the lead tank, slamming his photovisor down as he took up position on the benches inside. His men's faces were pale and drawn, their jaws clamped tight.
"This is going to be a mess," he warned them.
He tried to think of a bigger fiasco, but he couldn't. Not in the six generations of his family's service. Reams of vox chatter were streaming into his ear. His men were dying out there. He listened with growing tension as the tanks went as fast as was safe.
"Frickin' Cardinal," Howe cursed. "All he had to do was perform the ritual. It can't have been that hard. Get me the Pedrizo."
"No answer," his comms officer responded.
"Then get me Rastan."
"He's not answering."
"What about intake barracks? The Calabania? Get me someone. We need guns down here. And as soon as there's any word of the Pedrizo, then let me know."
"Roger that, sir."
After a moment, the lead tank slowed.
"What the hell is wrong?" Howe demanded.
"Rioters," the tank commander said.
Howe dragged the man out of his cupola seat. He threw the top hatch open and wriggled into position. He liked to see the world through the clear plaz screen of his helmet. It blocked out the periphery, gave him a view straight ahead. No deviations, no messing. He pulled the heavy flame around and pulled the ignition bolt back. It let off a gout of smoky black flame as he settled into position.
"I'll clear the crowd," he said and fired.
Promethium fuel arced across the gap and the scum scattered or died. He didn't much care which. He spoke in a low voice, full of command and menace.
"Forward!"
The convoy accelerated again. The lead tank juddered as it went over an impromptu barricade, but whether the bumps were bodies or beds or sacks of food, they did not wait to find out. They slewed into a square. More gangers fell back into the side streets.
"Wheel left," Howe ordered,
and fired another spurt of flaming promethium at them. They returned with hard rounds. He didn't bother with them any more. "Approaching the Grotto Chapel," his driver informed him. Crowds of terrified locals ducked out of the way at the sight of the enforcers. The higher they climbed, the more tense the Evercity became, and the thicker the press. Howe's photovisor picked out individual faces with reams of criminal records and surveillance data. But most of them were plain, law-abiding citizenry, scared, angry, and many of them in pain. He could see the loathing in their eyes, and he did not care. He was the law on Portance. From the left, a shot rang out, hissing overhead. Howe barked a short order, and his repressor slewed to a crawl.
"Take the flamer," he ordered the commander,
as he threw himself back to the rear turret and slid into the underslung seat. He casually engaged the storm bolter.
"Anyone see where that shot came from?"
8 o'clock, I think," the driver said.
Rudgard hosed the crowd with mass reactive bolts. They spun bodies round, left gaping holes, punched grown men to the ground. Another shot, closer this time. It pinged off the repressor tank's upper armour. He saw a shape, a darting body jumping to the side behind a building with a built-in water tank.
"Keep moving," he shouted as he returned fire.
The convoy pushed forward behind him. They were in the middle of the main street. At the end, he could see the cliff face of the Acropolis and, at its feet, the golden domes of the Grotto Chapel. Howe let off a stream of full auto rounds. They thundered into the stone walls, letting off a storm of sparks. By the time he had finished, the stone had dissolved into dust. He banged the top of the repressor with his gloved fist as he felt hard rounds thrum the air about him. The tank jerked forward, metal tracks kicking up dirt and dust in its wake. The tanks behind added to his firepower. Empty casings tumbled in their wake as Rudgard kept firing. They massacred their way through the crowd. As they chased the rioters, they turned into Magdalena Street and found it blocked by a roaring conflagration of oil drums, rockcrete slabs and metal girders. The driver panicked.
"Straight!"
Rudgard shouted.
You freaking idiot, straight! Drive through it, full speed!
The driver shouted as he slammed his foot down. The engine roared and the flaming barrier buckled under the impact. Rudgard was thrown forward. They slewed to the side and, for a moment, the heat alarm sounded before they were through. The second tank slammed through the hole that they had made. The next tank rumbled forward. As the third approached the barricade, there was a monumental explosion. Rudgard spun around. The repressor tank was lifted 10 feet into the air before the buildings to either side collapsed and the whole street was lost in smoke and debris.
"I've just heard from the Pedrizo," his Voxbeed reported. "He escaped via tunnels. He's back at the Calvert. He wants you to know that he is safe."
"Great, and now we're not."
Rudgard gritted the words out as the aftermath of the explosion rocked them. Chapter 7. The Cadians of the 101st responded to the growing emergency in minutes. The alarm klaxon was still sounding as they streamed out of the barracks in their armoured transports. Minka's squad were third from the front in a convoy of 20. As the Chimera jerked forward, she slammed the door locks in place and took her place on the benches.
"Weapons check," she ordered,
and joined the rest of her squad as they went through the routine, checking power packs were fully charged, safeties were on, bayonets were ready, and armour straps were all buttoned down. She couldn't look in Laptev's direction. He kept blinking.
"Check his gear," she told Belus.
"I can do it,"
Laptev hissed, and shoved the other man off. Belus gave Minka a questioning look. They left Laptev to it.
"Right," she said to the rest. "Benedict is down there. We're going to get him out alive and head back here. I want no crap. You shoot on my orders, understand?"
The Chimera accelerated and the soldiers slid backwards along the bench, then readjusted their backsides as the armoured transport swung out of the main gates of the barracks and into the street.
"Picking up anything?" Minka asked the driver, Breve.
"Nothing unusual," he said.
There was a thud and a jolt ran through the vehicle.
"Contact?"
Minka said. There was a long pause.
"Pothole," Breve reported.
The descent to town was a sickening switchback as the Chimeras went at combat speed. The squad went through their routines, then fell into silence as they prepared themselves. Out of the corner of her eyes, Minka could see Laptev's booted feet. He had one ankle crossed across the other, like he was relaxing in the mess.
"A whole company," he said.
"Benedict is one of the best there is," Minka snapped.
"Then how the hell did he get himself into all this trouble?"
There were beads of sweat on Minka's upper lip. She felt anger rise up her neck. Outside, they could hear the shouts of angry voices, and through the vents, they could all smell burning. As they levelled out, an autocannon started to bark. The roar of the engine rose in pitch as the Chimeras accelerated to full speed. No one spoke. They were thrown about violently.
"Getting warm now," Breve said.
Minka flicked her Voxbeed onto the open channel. The exchanges were short and curt. Reports of enemy sightings and strength, fires burning, ammo loadouts, a machine spirit needing the ritual of pacification. She closed her eyes for a moment and took in a deep breath. If the road is easy, her father had liked to say, then the destination is worthless. Hard rounds ricocheted off the repressor. Chief Enforcer Howe ducked. Only his helmet was showing. He scanned the square for the best means of escape.
"Bear left," he shouted. "I'm trying. There's another barricade," his driver shouted and put his foot to the floor.
They hit the barricade with a screech of tortured girders and rockcrete. Rudgard was thrown forward. He wanted to shout orders, but the blow had winded him.
"We're stuck,"
the driver shouted as the engines whined. The tank was still inching forwards.
"Put your freaking foot down."
"We're stuck."
The driver tried to slam into reverse and the tracks turned frantically. Within seconds, the ceramite box became a red-hot oven. Rudgard's step became sticky as the rubber of his sole started melting.
"Do something,"
Rudgard shouted, and suddenly the repressor lurched forward. The driver was blind. All he could see was flames and smoke. They hit a wall and kept moving through it. Rudgard was thrown to the floor.
I can't see, the driver shouted.
Rudgard cursed. He had to punch the hatch open again. He dragged himself up. For a moment, his vision was obscured by dust and smoke. The impact had torn the storm bolter from its mounting. He shouted down to his driver, but the glass of the driver's vision slot had shattered in the heat, the glass crazed white with fractures. He battered broken window frame wood from the top of the tank, and then they were in one of the cobbled squares. The tables that lined the square were overturned, the recaf stalls smashed. A missile streaked overhead. The tank slowed for a moment, its engine screaming as debris entangled its tracks. Suddenly, he saw a warrior with a demo charge running at them in a crouch.
Right!
The tank swerved. Rudgard was thrown about the turret so hard it bruised his ribs. He saw the flash of las bolts out of the corner of his eye. He ducked down. Somehow, his helmet had been torn from his head.
They're closing in, he shouted.
He saw another demo charge out of the corner of his eye and scrambled for the bolt pistol at his hip. He tore at the holster and threw himself up. The smoke launchers fired and the air was full of sulphurous white smoke that burned Rudgard's throat. He put a hand to his mouth. His eyes were streaming. He wiped away the tears on the back of his arm, drew his pistol and fired at the darting ganger.
Just you try, he hissed as another ganger ran out.
The man had a cloth tied over his face. He managed three steps before Rudgard caught him with a barrel full of manstoppers. They did what they claimed. The next attacker was a tall, rangy youth. Rudgard did not miss. The barrel smoked angrily. Rudgard was starting to enjoy this. He sniffed as he paused and dropped back down into the compartment. The air was thick with propellant smoke.
What the hell is going on?
There was a crunch of gears. His enforcers were praying quietly. He knew the prayer. Lord Emperor, we shall not deviate from the course that you laid out for us. We are armed with righteousness and armoured with faith.
Listen, it's not faith that's going to get us out of here. Get your guns and shoot them, Howe shouted.
The driver slammed the repressor forward. Another explosion ripped the ground. There was smoke and grit in Rudgard's mouth. He shouted into his Voxbeed, and the driver shouted back at him. The repressor spun about in a tight circle, its gears whining as the tracks slewed off and the tank came to an abrupt halt. Now they were completely wrecked.
Get out,
Rudgard ordered, but he did not wait for the others. It was each man for himself now, and he was damned if he was dying today. He was halfway out when the repressor's magazine suddenly exploded and flames ripped through the inside. The explosion fired him out of the top of the tank like a cork from a bottle. He landed with a bruising thump in the middle of the inferno and screamed as the flames began to bite through his armour. In the grotto chapel of St. Ignazio, armed men threw themselves at the Sisters of the Ebon Chalice. They were fearless and furious and died in their droves as Canoness Maddalena stabbed and fired into them.
The Pedrizo went this way, she told her gad companion, Sister Menel. There must be a way out.
They fell back into the rear of the chapel. Acolytes were huddled in the shadows.
Where is the Pedrizo? Maddalena demanded.
They pointed to a low doorway set into the stone. She put her hand to it, but the portal did not budge. She kicked it, but still the armoured portal did not move. She fired a couple of bolt rounds, and even they did not dent it. Menel tugged her arm. The attackers were swarming through the choir. They were trapped. Whichever way the Pedrizo had gone, it was not open to them. Dido's squad surrounded Benedict and Mir as they cut their way through the choir towards the back of the chapel. Benedict fired his pistol, left-handed. His aim was almost as good as with his right hand, but changing the power cell was difficult. Benedict handed the gun to his adjutant. Mia returned the reloaded weapon. Dido kicked a low wooden door open. In the sacristy, two choir boys were hiding under the table. There was an explosion in the choir just behind them. They pushed through a corridor, past rooms strewn with abandoned robes and books and incense burners. They stopped at the door they had entered the chapel by. There was no sign of the transports. The crowd filled the square, and men were firing. Dido cursed inwardly, but she remained calm.
"Don't worry, sir. We'll get you out of here."
Canoness Maddalena fought her way out of the grotto chapel, leaving a swathe of dead behind her. As Lasbolt speared towards her, she smashed through a glacéic window and leapt down into the cobbled courtyard. Menel clambered after her. Their power-armoured boots thudded as they sought a way to escape. The canoness kicked a wooden gate down. There was a crowd on the other side. Maddalena strode out, pushing the bodies aside. The crowd reacted with fury. They threw anything that came to hand. Stones, shoes, litter.
"Traitors!"
one woman shouted at the sisters, and the crowd about her took up the call.
"Killers of Vandir!"
Numbers gave them courage. Numbers fired their hatred. Maddalena tried to shield Sister Menel, but the crowd surrounded them. The bravest began to run forward, aiming kicks and punches. Canoness Maddalena swung her bolt pistol round. She fired, killing with each shot. A bearded man charged, knife in hand. Maddalena's bolt hit him in the middle of the forehead. The blood inflamed the crowd. The two sisters were trapped, but they were fearless and deadly, more so because they were hopelessly outnumbered. And the crowd hated them, chanting as one,
"Traitors! Traitors!"
Minka's transport rattled into the upper reaches of the Evercity. Greaves' voice came from the front.
"Engaging!"
The gears of their chimera ground as the track swung them round. The multi-laser whined as the barrel spun, and the power pack ignited bolts of bright energy that stabbed out from the turret.
"Positions!"
Minka ordered, and in an instant her squad were up. A cord hung above each of their seats, with heavy-duty carabiniers. She clipped her webbing to the one above her head and thrust her las rifle through the firing slot. There was a low whiz as a grenade screamed over her head. Minka had a moment to steady herself, and then she felt a blast of heat on her exposed skin and cursed.
"Chimera down! Fire at will!
Breathe!"
she shouted. "Are those Calabinia?"
"No idea,"
Breathe voxed back. Something impacted their tank. Breathe cursed.
"If there are, they're not friendly."
Minka shot the nearest enemy. Something hit the front armour. It rang the chimera like a bell.
"We're good,"
Breve reported, still calm.
"Almost there."
There was a boom of ordnance.
"Thrown,"
Breve cursed.
"They've got tanks."
There was another boom, closer this time.
"We're backing up. Get out, guys."
Minka yanked open the door locks and slammed her open palm against the ramp release. The ramp slammed down, and the stink of ozone, camp filth and burning rushed in as they rushed out. Another squad's chimera was on fire. Someone was screaming. A medic, Streck, was kneeling at a wounded Cadian's side. The scene before them looked like a civil war. Buildings were burning. There were tanks on the streets. Fighters and civilians were mixed up. It was hard to see who was who. Las rifle fire stabbed from the higher buildings to the left, and also from the chapel bell tower. They were 30 feet from the chapel walls. The hab blocks facing onto the chapel square were aflame. The whole square was awash with enemy warriors. They had a tank as well. It fired once more, and the shot went high, slamming into the third floor of a baroque hab to her left.
"Forward!"
Minka shouted, crouching low, aiming and firing. Her squad followed behind her. She ducked into doorways, through smashed windows, under the overhang. City fights were where she'd earned her spurs. This felt natural. Thrilling. Terrifying. Normal. A ganger suddenly appeared round the corner. He levelled his polearm and charged. She hit him twice, but he took three more steps before his legs gave way and he slewed to the side. A fat, sweating man with full beard and a rudimentary augmetic arm burst from the ruins of the hab to her right. His teeth were very white. The serrated edges of his claws were dark with blood. He moved as wildly as a beast, knocking tables and chairs aside as he came forward in a hunched run. She put 5 shots into him before he fell and sprawled out. Minka suddenly realised her squad were out alone. The grotto chapel was 30 feet away. The square was filled with the dead and dying.
"Sergeant Lesk," a voice said in her vox piece. It was Colonel Sparker.
She looked back and saw him in the smoke, waving one hand in front of his face while the other held his bolt pistol. He looked veteran, practiced, calm.
"Keep pushing forward. I'm sending reinforcements."
There was a wall of dead about the 2 sisters of the Ebon Chalice. The mob hurled missiles and abuse, a storm of stones and sticks, chunks of rock, and then a homemade firebomb that shattered about their feet and sent a whoosh of flames up about them. Canoness Maddalena knocked the missiles aside. Power armour protected them against all but the largest, but they could not last unsupported.
"Keep moving," she ordered,
and the 2 of them started to cut away towards the cliffs of the Acropolis. They got halfway there when the dropped head of a statue hit Menel on the back of the head. She fell like a block, blood running from a 12 cuts. Maddalena scooped her up. The cliff was 30 yards away. It could have been 100 miles. A shot rang out. Maddalena felt the round hiss past her ear. She ducked as a 2nd shot followed. It grazed her temple. She staggered as a curtain of blood streamed down her face. She spun around, blade out for any attackers. The 3rd round struck her cheek. She spat clots from the ruin of her mouth, wiped the blood from her eyes, held the enemy back with wide sweeps of her combat blade. More hard rounds chipped her power armour. Someone dragged Sister Menel from her arms. A lasbolt hit her full in the face. Her power armour kept her upright for a few moments.
"Traitor!"
The roar of the mob was a wave that pounded against her. She was a bride of the Emperor. She was pure. She was devout. She was fearless as the mob fell on her. Minka paused as her squad caught up. Laptev was last. He came at a run, and behind him was the dark shape of Commissar Shand. His greatcoat flapped as he strode forward. The Commissar crossed the last few yards. His face was grim. She looked at the bolt pistol in his hand, and her mouth went dry.
"Lesk," he shouted. "Move forward."
The squad split into 2 fire teams.
"Laptev, cover us. I'll take point. Your lot, bring the crack charges up."
Laptev nodded. He wasn't going to refuse her now.
"Heavy weapons teams in place,"
Colonel Sparker's voice reported into a voxlink.
"Going in 4.
She held up a hand with 4 fingers raised, counted down. On 1, the heavy bolters started to fire. Their heavy put-put roared out as she hit 0. They hosed the open space with max reactive shells. The enemy threw themselves into cover, and in that moment of opportunity, Minka was up, boots scuffing on the cobblestones, sprinting into the open. She zigzagged forward, firing full auto, lasbolts spearing the swirling dust and smoke, setting off eddies and whirls in the dust clouds. She ducked into a doorway. Emerson was down, blood puddling about him. Behind her, Commissar Shand appeared. He was like a shade clinging to Minka's back. He had his bolt pistol drawn. His face was severe.
"Keep moving, Sergeant."
Rudgard did not know how he was still alive, but somehow he had thrown himself out of the fire and it lay between him and his attackers. Luck was fickle. He was not going to question her, but cut his way through anyone standing in his way, desperately slapping out any flames that still burned. But his right arm was a charred mess. The agony was something he could bear, because stopping meant he would die. A ganger ran towards him through the smoke and how, fired at point-blank range, the attacker fell. Another appeared behind him, how down that one too, staggering for a moment, but the enforcer did not fall. Rudgard's pistol clip was empty. The skin was falling off his right hand in strips. Beneath, the flesh was red and raw. There was grit and ash in the wound. He fumbled with his ammo belt as he tried to reload, but the pain was too much. He fell back into the corner of an overturned cargo six. It had been firebombed. The metal was still warm, and the paintwork had been scorched away. His right vambrance was still smouldering. He slapped at the last flames. The carapace armour was shredded. He jammed his pistol between his legs and used his good hand to trip the spring. The ammo clip came free. It took a maddening moment to load the last one. He pushed himself up, 10 rounds to go. He started counting now. He'd save the last one for himself, because if there was one thing Chief Enforcer Howe knew, it was that he was not going to be taken alive. The enemy were closing in from all directions. "Tank!" Weld hissed, and Dido threw Bendict back against the wall. They felt the vibrations as the machine rumbled past.
"Can't go that way,"
Dido said, and pulled them in the opposite direction. Welt led them out of the back of the chapel.
"Sorry, sir,"
Dido said, as she put an arm about the general's waist.
"Just want to keep you safe."
They hurried across a gap. Welt rounded the corner and ran straight into an armed mob. He knelt as another trooper, Gacken, fired the flamer. There were screams as the enemy fell backwards. Gacken sprayed the chapel wall. He gave the doorway a few extra seconds. The flames licked up through roiling black smoke. Dido kept Bendict moving. There were narrow stone stairs running up the back of the retaining wall. There was no handrail or means of support. The Acadians ran up as Gacken and Welt covered them. Mia did not like it.
"This leads to the cliff. We need to get away from here." "I've no idea, sir, but I don't see any escape for us that way."
She pointed back the way they had come. Mia relented. Dido took Bendict's arm.
"This way, sir."
They hurried up the steps and ran 30 feet up the retaining wall. They were halfway up when someone started firing at them. Fragments of stone were thrown out into the long drop.
"Keep moving," Dido said.
Welt hung back, sighted the shooter in a second-floor window and fired.
"Keep moving,"
she repeated, pushing them up. Dido went first. At the top, an iron gate blocked the way. It did not give way.
"Stand back," she said.
She put her carbine's barrel to the lock, held the trigger down on semi-auto. The lasbolts glared red, and within moments, sparks of molten metal rained out. She kicked the gate open, and then they were scrabbling up among the thorny bushes on a near vertical slope.
"Where is this heading?"
Bendict said.
"I don't know,"
she said, helping him catch his balance.
"But it's safer than down there."
They zigzagged along precipitous tracks between spiky shrubs and overhanging outcrops.